Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Wake up to something different on Sunday mornings by joining me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz. The finest in modern jazz, from hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz every Sunday morning at 9 on Sheffield Live. 93.2 FM.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Dawn? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3, here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You are listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel and Wire.
We go where no man has gone before.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk, and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Afternoon. This is
Hello.
The film show.
Is this thing on?
I think it's on. I'm Martin.
I'm Denise.
And we're back. Happy New Year!
You're going to be the last people I'm going to say Happy New Year to, because you stretch it a bit in January, don't you? But yeah. Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
We're back.
Merry
with the
New
film
Year!
Show.
As Eddie Murphy says in
Merry New
places.
Year!
Okay, so we're back. I hope you've all had a very nice Christmas, New Year. We're back. Avatar doesn't seem to be showing hardly anywhere now, so I'm happy about that.
So it's safe for Martin to emerge from his domestic abode.
Something I can put the Blu-ray remote down and actually step out into a cinema.
We've been doing that a lot this week, haven't we?
I've even been to the pictures.
So many films that we can't fit them all in today's show.
No, I haven't even been able to fit in going to see all the films that I wanted to see.
I've had a binge week. It's been great.
It's been, I've got a big binge for this week. I'll tell you about that later. Good. Anyway, so the Golden Globes were announced.
They happened.
And I'm just trying to find out who won.
Well, it's a combination, isn't it? The Golden Globes of television and film.
Yeah. We're just going to keep to the film one.
We'll just keep to the film, yeah.
Stick to what we do on this
well,
show.
Well, the Oscar-winning, going-to-be Oscar-winning Sinners obviously got a Golden Globe. I hope they get more at the Oscars than just the music. Hamnet did well as well, which we'll be talking
which more
about
of later.
Later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Timothy Chalamet won Best Actor in a music...
It's a musical comedy, which is a bit...
They do stretch it.
Stretch a bit. Again, more of that later. One Battle After Another also won Best Picture, didn't it?
For musical or comedy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right, okay.
And Hamnet won Best Drama.
Yes. Mm. Helen Mirren won a Cecil B. DeMille Award. Is that just because she's so old? I don't know.
And brilliant. Yeah. Old and brilliant.
Yeah, I'll watch 5 minutes of the the one where she was dying. As a five, yeah, thanks, thanks, Ellen, but no thanks.
It's often used as an indicator of other awards because it's like the first big one, isn't it?
Yes,
Hollywood wise, anyway.
Paul Thomas Anderson won for director and I think for screenplay. There weren't a lot of surprises really at the end of it, and I think it's pretty much what you can expect from the Academy Awards.
Well, there was some for the non-English language. So the nominees, there's a winner of that was Secret Agent, which is Brazilian, but a lot of the other nominees are out or coming out soon.
Yeah. Agent is coming out. Is it in February?
It's soon, yeah. Yeah. But It Was Just an Accident was one of the nominees. No Other Choice, which we're talking about as a release for next week,
yeah,
soon. Sentimental Value, the Norwegian film. So there's some
which
good
lasted
stuff.
About a week, didn't it? They have been machine gunning films into cinemas,
yeah.
And like there isn't a chance. Well, it's not just that there's not a chance to see them.
I took my chance and I did see Sentimental Value,
but you know, it's like you
blink and you miss it.
Yeah,
with some of those,
and they don't get any chance to build up any sort of word of mouth, do they? And well, we talked about this a lot at the end of last year as what a bad year it had been for cinema attendances. And I think this is just another factor in, you know, I saw a great film last night. I went to the pictures, saw a great...
If your mate that you talk to about it wants to go and see it next week, it's gone.
Yeah.
But The Voice of Hind Rajab we'll also be talking about a little bit later if we can.
Yeah.
So some really good non-English language films in the nominee list there. And Jesse Buckley... Wowed in Hamlet.
Well, we'll be talking about that. Unfortunately. Anyway.
But Rose Byrne won.
Who I think is really good.
Yeah.
I think she's great.
And this was for musical or comedy, If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You, which I'm looking forward to that as well.
And just to wrap this up, one film which I was glad because of this current distribution and exhibition that. Which seemed to come, and it may have been in cinemas for a day. Anaconda, which was a film about them remaking the Anaconda.
The trailer looked fun, but it's one of those trailers where I'm like, I could probably do without the film. Yeah.
I think it was gone within a week.
Well, it's lovely Jack Black and Paul Rudd, who I've got a lot of time for, and it's something that if I caught it. Later.
I think you'll probably be able to catch it next week on.
Yeah, probably already on.
I know, sort of, you know, Channel 5. Channel 5 film channel.
Another couple of smaller acting nods, though, went to. So, Best Supporting Male was Stellan Skarsgård in Sentimental Value, where he plays like a film director who's estranged from his daughter.
This is all getting so meta, all of
this. Yeah,
more of that later.
Loved that. but also, Tiana Taylor, who you really liked in One Battle After Another, she got a supporting female actor as well.
Absolutely
so.
Brilliant, she was. Is that it?
Well,
I mean, we'll be talking about the same films over BAFTAs, Oscars, and then we can find it. That's it.
It's a good indicator. I like some of the smaller awards in there that we're interested in. Yeah.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Chris Rea. Are you looking at me puzzled?
I'm not, because I've seen the schedule.
Why are we celebrating Chris Rea? Well loved. A word that's increasingly being overused is beloved.
Beloved.
Beloved. Beloved.
Beloved.
Beloved. singer, songwriter from Sunderland. And
Chris Rea is not just for Christmas.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But he's a fool if he thinks it's over. He's on the road to hell. I hope not, Chris. Anyway.
Oh, I do hope not.
No, you should be on the beach.
Quite a nice Geordie, wasn't
he? Yeah, he was. He wasn't a Geordie, I think it was Sunderland. They can't even call him Geordies.
Put that in there deliberately so you can
see. We don't go outside sort of Yorkshire and North Derbyshire, we haven't upset too many people. Just our close relatives, really, anyway. Anyway, Chris Rea. Chris Rea did star in a movie. The wonderful Parting Shots, which was, in fact, the last film that Michael Winner directed.
So Parting Shots was Michael Winner's parting shot?
I think it was. Oh. And it ended up being Chris Rea's parting shot as well, obviously. But this is a film about a photographer who goes for his medical checkup and is told he's only got 6 weeks to live. And he decides what he's going to do.
Very specific, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I think John Cleese.
Convenient for the narrative.
Exactly. Yeah. Keeps it in a 90-minute runtime. And then so he decides, no, what he's going to do is he's going to kill everybody who has ever done him wrong.
Oh.
And then he goes on this, sponsored murder spree, where he murders a number of actors who are probably all mates of Michael Winner.
Wait a minute, I've just seen Joanna Lumley was in this. Does this mean there is a scene where she gets murdered?
I'm not giving any. No, giving no any spoilers.
No spoilers.
Tell me who else is it. Go through that cast list.
Well, you've got also Oliver Reed.
Oliver Reed.
I'll bet that was a fun set, right? Yeah. In 1988.
Keep good going. Lorks. Keep going.
Bob Hoskins.
Leave it.
Diana Rigg.
Diana Rigg. Oh.
Definitely beloved.
Yes.
Ben Kingsley.
Sir Ben Kingsley, if you
to
will.
To me, yeah. The Good Life. Felicity Kendall.
Felicity Kendall. It's all his mate. It's all Michael Winner's mates. You know, we'll come along for an afternoon. It is god-awful. But it's one of those films that once it comes on, you can't stop watching it.
You have to watch it, yeah. Now, if I was channel hopping one night, what the...
Parting Shots is on.
Now I'll know what it is. So this is almost a spoiler.
It's on YouTube. Because
this is the kind of film you shouldn't seek out, though. You should just stumble across it, shouldn't you?
But several years ago, I told Shelley about it, and she didn't believe me. She said, oh, you're just making this up, like you do all that other stuff. I said, no. I said, look, I've sent for this DVD of it, and I sent from Germany for it. And when it came, it's in German, but there's no English subtitles, and there's no English dub. It's just in German. But I tell you, it's brilliant in German. Oh. It's even better in German. It's you know exactly what's going on because the performances are so broad. And I'll say, poor old Chris, he just sits there in these scenes while all these professional actors are sort of really overplaying it, over-egging it. And you think, he's looking and thinking, he just wants to sit down and strum his guitar for a while.
I only signed up to do the theme tune.
Sure, yeah. Look, now they got me doing it. But I always thought he seemed a really, really lovely bloke.
Yes.
Chris Rea. And I'll be sad to see him go. And I think On the Beach is a great song. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Chris Rea.
From the sublime to the ridiculous.
I am YouTubing that this week.
You going to announce this one?
Are we? Oh, who are we doing next? Is it Bellatar? Bellatar, Hungarian film director and screenwriter, who I have limited experience of, but I think it was The Showroom did a season of his films.
It was a BFI
last year. Yeah,
BFI season of.
And
stuff
I did catch my first Bellatar, and he is definitely a director that. Well. I'm going to hand over to you because you know.
Which one did you go
with? Oh, I can't even remember. It's the one where it was on a dock and there was a guy in
Man
like
from
a
London.
Watch. Yes, that's it. With the suitcase business and the a lot of time spent in like a cafe. Yeah.
People looking glum.
It's one of those things where I remember the essence of it and the feeling of it, but I couldn't remember the narrative of it, but I knew that I wanted to be engrossed in it. But also, it was definitely a film to watch in the cinema, because if I'd been watching at home, I'd have been distracted.
Jigsaw.
Yeah, probably. So tell us about Béláthár.
Béláthár, a Hungarian director who is known for his very austere, quite intimidating films. They are... They can be difficult. You've got to be in the mood for a Béláthár film.
Yeah.
They can be very long. His longest film, Satan Tango, is 7 hours. But probably, he probably came to the fore in around about late 1990s with his film Werkmaster Harmonies, which is on a truly epic scale. But it's, you know, just set in this village out in the middle of nowhere in Hungary where... I don't know, it doesn't even seem to be hot running water in any of the houses or anything, let alone electric light bulbs. And it's a very, very serious, very quite challenging film about the terrors of mass delusion and populism, which erupts in military dictatorships and...
Which, growing up where he grew up, he's got a lot of history or understanding of.
His style, let's say, is very, very long takes, very little dialogue.
Usually and black and white as well.
Some of his earlier films, before we sort of got onto this style, there's a couple of them were in colour, and they were more like social realist things, fly on the wall things. These are very, very strictly formal and rigorous in how he presents his cinema. And sometimes you are just following people walking down a street.
And they're all ordinary people, aren't they?
Ordinary. Most of the time. There's a couple of bits in Werkmaster Harmonies where there's some people who you think, oh, God, yeah, no, that reminds me of someone. But he started with a film called Damnation, which, if you want to watch any of his films, it may be the easiest way into his cinema, as it's almost like a thriller. But it still takes place against these extraordinary like post-industrial backgrounds. Then Werkmaster Harmonies, if you feel you want more.
People often mention, I'm going to get the pronunciation wrong, I am sorry, but people often mention Satan Tango as the masterpiece, or was it just one that got him to a biggest audience?
It's the one that's 7 hours.
Or maybe the smallest audience then, if it's 7 hours.
Well, I'm going to watch Satan Tango this week.
Yeah.
Because it's 3 DVDs of the copy I've got, and I think that two hour plus bits. So I wouldn't want to sit down and watch it for 7 hours.
No. You don't want to watch anything more than 90 minutes these days.
These days. Yeah. And I've never watched it all the way through, so I'm going to do that this week. The one you saw, The Man from London, which strangely is based on a George Simenon novel. And it's in many ways relatively close to the narrative of the novel. And then his final film was The Touring Horse, which was back in 2011, where he retired. And not to make any more films. So he's an absolutely fascinating filmmaker. He's a giant, let's say, of what you would regard as European, Eastern European cinema.
Mm.
Miserable, black and white, goes on forever.
but strangely involving
And I think, you know, sometimes with the amount of rubbish that gets put out in cinemas these days, this is sort of like, it really sort of clears your palate, let's say, and you sit and watch cinema, not just a movie.
Yeah. He started a film school after he retired, didn't he? So there's a hope of inspiring
his view on cinema. Yeah. It's quite purist. But I think everyone, every now and again, needs to watch a Béláthár film.
Yeah.
They start with Damnation, if you can. That's like an easier way in. And don't expect there to be lots of car chases or anything. You've got to be in the mood, you know?
Yeah.
To let it, and to just open yourself up to watch this and not want it to rush up. And you can get into quite a sort of a state of almost epiphany with it. I don't want this scene to end.
Yeah, yeah.
I want these guys to keep on walking for another mile or two.
Yeah, there was. I remember a scene in The Man from London where he's walking through various alleyways to get, or I can't even remember which character it is walking.
Yeah.
I just remember these moments and the feeling of walking through these back alleys. And
yeah.
Because it's sort of contemporary, but it feels 50s or, yeah.
Strangely, one filmmaker he influenced was Gus Van Sant.
Mm.
And
Elephant, yeah.
Elephant. Mm. There's one called Jerry with Matt Damon and Casey Affleck, where they're just walking through the desert for an hour and a half. And I think even at the end of Jerry, there is a tribute thanking Bela Tarr on the end credits.
Oh.
So your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to watch a Bela Tarr film.
We recommend it, don't we?
Yeah.
Just get in the mood and get in the zone. You've got to be in the zone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we're going to do a bit of trailer trash.
I've got some trailer trash, The Odyssey.
Christopher Nolan's
version. Is coming out in mid-July.
I mean, it looked all right, but there's no Ralph Fiennes in this one.
More of that later. Matt Damon as Odysseus, I think. So Homer's The Odyssey has been transferred to the cinema, and the trailer is out in cinemas now. Oh, you can look at it online. It looks quite
serious.
Men rowing on a boat.
With the Centurion costumes.
It's all them women singing over there, putting me off. Anyway, we'll see how that turns
flipping
out.
Flipping women.
But it looks...
Ruining everything.
It doesn't look like a Hollywood epic, does it? It's very, very dark.
Very dark and gritty looking. Yeah.
So, I'm very ambivalent about Nolan anyway, so let's see what he does.
Yeah, I take him... Yeah.
I've seen that. And anyway, it's out there, and I'm sure we're going to be seeing lots more trailers for it as we get closer and closer to its release date, which I believe is the 17th of July this year.
I just have to mention... I saw a headline that said, "Is Odysseus Christopher Nolan's latest sad dad?" on Vulture magazine. Does that make me laugh? Just thought I'd share that with you.
Now, I put this trailer in, not really quite for a reason, which I found, oh no, it's not what I thought it was.
Yeah.
But,
you thought you were going to hate it this, more than... Yeah.
Is this thing on?
tap,
no. Which is a new film directed by Bradley Cooper. And I read this really weird thing that it was based on how John Bishop became
a stand-up comedian. Yeah.
Anyway, Laura Dern, Bradley Cooper, Will Arnott. I thought, it's going to be all these Hollywood stars doing Scouse accents. It's going to be hilarious.
And then you saw the trailer.
they're just in America doing it.
It's just inspired by the experience of John
Bishop. I've never been inspired by John Bishop.
No.
But one thing I like about John Bishop is he lays to rest that lie that all Scousers are funny.
Oh, Martin!
Because he is not. And no, seriously. you carry on the rest, because all I'll do is insult John Bishop for a couple of minutes.
Is this thing on reimagines the story as an American character played by Will Arnett? His marriage is in breakdown mode, marriage to Laura Dern. And he wonders why someone gets into a club for free and he doesn't. And they're like, well, they signed up to do the stand-up. So just on impulse and to save a bit of money and thinking he won't get called up, he goes into the club to puts his name on.
There you have
and
it.
Ends up being hilarious, probably over a long period of time.
Well, that's based on fiction then. Yeah. Right, we're going to wind it up to 25 past now. And we are going to be doing is a bit of a tribute to a major film star who passed away over the Christmas period, Brigitte Bardot. And we're going to kick off with a bit of music. And this is from her 1967 television special, Brigitte. And this is Harley Davidson.
Je ne reconnais plus personne en Harley Davidson. J'appuie sur le starter et voici que je quitte la terre. J'irai peut-être au paradis, mais dans un train d'enfer. Je n'ai besoin de personne en Harley Davidson. Je ne reconnais plus personne en Harley Davidson. Et si je meurs demain, c'est que elle était mon destin. Je tiens bien moins à la vie qu'à mon terrible engin.
A bit of a sneak preview if you can guess what the next song is.
This CD player is anyway,
we're working with 90s tech guys. What can we tell you?
So that was Harley Davidson by Brigitte Bardot, who passed away at the age of 91 a few weeks ago. Strangely, she hadn't. She actually retired from making films back in 1973, she was enormously recognisable as a film star. I did have a title for this movie, which was going to be From Sex Kitten to Puppy Lover.
Oh.
As she was, and she this image of her as a sex kitten was something that was, that was her image in the 1950s.
Mm.
And it was created with her and her then husband, Roger Vadim. And she had been in a number of fairly lightweight comedies in France, and in this country, she was in Doctor at Sea with Dirk Bogarde, if you can imagine that.
I've seen that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, it's on most afternoons. It's usually on every afternoon on BBC Two, didn't it? And then everything changed in 1956 when she made the film And God Created Woman, which was directed by Vadim and created this Brigitte Bardot persona.
And it was an international phenomenon as
international
well, wasn't it?
Yeah. Especially in America, where a dubbed version of it was pretty much blowing away any other films that was looking to be, let's say, provocative.
Mm.
The image that Bardot put over was of free-spirited. The Bardot top, the off-the-shoulder, off of both shoulders, top that was named after her, her tousled hair. Before that, she'd always been like quite preppy almost in her screen personas. Mm. But this is what she became and carried on with pretty much for the rest of her career. And she made about 40-odd films during the 20 years she was active as actor. And a lot of them were intensely forgettable. I was looking back on it and I'm thinking, well, maybe I haven't actually seen a lot of her films. But the ones I have seen are the ones I think would probably be in the mantle of her best-known ones. And the one I would put out there is the film she made with Jean-Luc Godard in 1963, Le Mépris, or Contempt. And she looks amazing in this. And I think you can tell there's a bit of a tension, friction between how Godard is using her in this. And the film opens, the first time we see her in the film, she's laying naked on her front in a bed with red, white and blue filters across her body as she talks with her husband about what it is that he finds beautiful in her. So you can see the Godard is like deconstructing that Bardo image persona right from the word go. And the film is also about filmmaking. The German director Fritz Lang is in the process of making a film version of, get this, The Odyssey in Le Mépris. And Bardo's husband, played by Michel Piccoli, is having to sort of bastardise this script to make the Odyssey more Hollywood-friendly. And there's a producer, played by Jack Palance, who's trying to drag them down the commercial path for the film. And Bardo assumes a number of different looks and identities throughout the film, with different wigs, different outfits. But like she does in many of her films, she always strikes me as being very bored in the films that she is. She's got that, you know, that sort of surly look, I'd rather be anywhere else but here look.
Yeah.
Which in some ways I quite like.
Well, I was going to say that would appeal to you, surely. Yeah.
Mardy French women.
You cannot touch this. Yeah.
I don't even know what she's saying. I can't speak French. Ne touchez-moi pas. But that is an amazing film. It's a film, a great film that she stars in. It's a great film about filmmaking. And then after that, well, there's Viva Maria, a sort of a Mexican Revolution spaghetti western with her and Jean Moreau, where she looks even more peed off in that than what she does in Le Mépris, probably because she's sharing the screen with Moreau. And I think Jean Moreau gets some of the better lines in Viva Maria. She's in a pretty awful spaghetti western with Sean Connery called Shalako, which used to be on afternoon screenings a lot in years gone by. And her final film was Don Juan, If He Were a Woman, where she does appear naked several times in that with Jane Birkin. And that again was directed by Vadim. And then after that, it's over for her. And she becomes involved in animal protection organisations, and at the same time gets seduced by right-wing politics.
Yes, which is
problematic.
Highly problematic, yes.
Well, we're saying that because we don't agree with it, I suppose. Mm. People don't know, that was great. But yeah, I mean, very, very right-wing campaigns and political parties with Marine Le Pen's.
And I mean, she did have some influence as well.
Oh, yeah, no. She wasn't. She was there and as an active participant in some of these campaigns, which would be sometimes very, very anti-immigrant, borderline racist, some would put them down to. So it's problematic the way her career went. And I think she was always being fined and charged for having done things against the French Constitution. And still, she was, in France, she was a popular figure, but she was also a figure. She was a figure who would inspire Simone de Beauvoir to write a pamphlet about
her. I was stunned when you put this in my hands today.
You wouldn't have thought I would have had that, would you?
Well, I mean, the price 2 and 6 as
two
well
and six.
On the front. Simone de Beauvoir, Brigitte Bardot and the Lolita Syndrome.
Yeah. And
then with many half-tone illustrations. I'm not quite sure Simone de Beauvoir issued this herself.
Well, that's published by the New English Library, which always used to do that sort of risque type of stuff. And I think this is from about 1962.
There are a lot of this edition. A lot of, and
we were just saying, well, in France, that would have been a pamphlet with no illustrations whatsoever. In this country, every other page has got a photo of Bardot in the skimpiest
of outfits.
It's almost,
if you were putting it together now, you'd Google Brigitte Bardot Lolita looking pictures, please. Yeah. To go with this.
So there you are. But you were going to end this. You found a nice bit that you wanted to read.
Well, it's just the conclusion of Simone de Beauvoir's, and knowing what we know about what happened with her, it's quite an interesting.
Yeah.
So Brigitte's eyes, her smile, her presence impel one to ask oneself, why? Why not? Are they going to hush up the questions she raised without a word? Will she too agree to talk lying twaddle? Mm-hmm. Perhaps the hatred she has aroused will calm down, but she will no longer represent anything for anyone. I hope that she will not resign herself to insignificance in order to gain popularity. I hope she will mature but not change.
There you have it. And that was written in 1960, before the whole story of Bardot was even out there for us. So we're going to sign off from that now with another piece of music and maybe one of her most famous singles, with her and Serge Gainsbourg doing Bonnie and Clyde, a single that I wrote a chapter in a book about.
I love this.
Vous avez lu l'histoire de Jesse James? Comment il vécu? Comment il est mort? Ça vous a plu, hein? Vous en demandez encore? Eh bien, écoutez l'histoire de Bonnie and Clyde. Alors voilà, Clyde a une petite amie. Elle est belle et son prénom c'est
Bonnie.
À eux deux, ils forment le gang Barrow.
Parker
et Clyde Barrow.
Bonnie and Clyde. Moi, lorsque j'ai connu Clyde autrefois, c'était un gars loyal, honnête et droit.
Il faut croire que c'est la société qui m'a défini abîmé.
Bonnie and Clyde.
Qu'est-ce qu'on n'a pas écrit sur elle et moi?
On prétend que nous tuons de sang-froid.
C'est pas drôle, mais on est bien obligé
de faire taire celui qui se met à gueuler. Bonnie and Clyde.
Chaque fois qu'un policeman se fait buter,
qu'un garage ou qu'une banque se fait braquer,
pour la police ça ne fait pas de mystère.
C'est signé
Clyde Barrow,
Bonnie Parker, Bonnie and Clyde. Bonnie and Clyde.
Maintenant, chaque fois qu'on essaie de se ranger,
de s'installer tranquille dans un meublé,
dans les 3 jours, voilà le tac-tac-tac,
des mitraillettes qui reviennent à l'attaque. Bonnie and Clyde. Bonnie and Clyde.
Un de ces quatre, nous tomberons ensemble. Moi je m'en fous, c'est pour Bonnie que je tremble.
Quelle importance qu'il me fasse la peau. Moi, Bonnie, je tremble pour Clyde Barrow. Bonnie and Clyde.
De toute façon, il ne pouvait plus se s'en sortir.
La seule solution, c'était mourir.
Mais plus d'un les a suivis en enfer.
Quand sont morts Barrow et Bonnie Parker, Bonnie and Clyde, Bonnie and Clyde.
Well, whatever you can say. Yeah, we listen to the film show on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM, etc.
And
et
on digital, and you can listen online if you want afterwards. If you
well,
want to
whatever you want.
Again.
Yeah, and whatever you want to say about Brigitte Bardot, woo-hoo! That song is magnifique.
I love that song. Yeah. Reviews.
Reviews. We've watched so many films that we can't fit them all in, so we're going to do some reviews next week that were already out. But film of the week.
28 years later.
The Bone Temple.
Yes. Well, you know, I was very disappointed with how the last 28 years later ended. It just threw me, and so I was looking forward to this, but I was also a little ambivalent as to what it might
and
be.
And Nia DaCosta's taken over the directing reins.
Yep.
Who did a version of Candyman that I haven't seen.
No, I haven't.
But I now want to.
but still produced and written by Danny Boyle and Alex Garland. And it starts off exactly where the last film finished, albeit in a slightly more way that reflects the film that is about to come, let's say. And so we're with Spike, who has been taken in by this band of
Jimmies,
and maybe get to that in a minute. And we then find there's a story splits between this band of vagabonds in blonde wigs, all called Jimmy, and Ralph Fiennes as the Doctor, who is trying to sort of make contact with one of the alphas who were running rampant, let's say, in the previous film. And eventually these two threads combine.
Combustively.
literally. and in between that, this is an 18 certificate.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, there's a couple of bits in it that I did genuinely find quite hard to watch.
Yeah, but we were talking about this, weren't we, over a coffee before the show. And they're not, the violence is there and the aftermath of the violence is there, but a lot is left to your imagination.
Yeah.
And I find your imagination, it goes to quite a dark place in some of these scenes.
And I think a lot of that is down to the sound. You hear a lot of what is going on. And that, as is quite often the case, you think far worse than what. But yeah, so I found this, I found it a much better film altogether. And it's the first of two films we're going to talk about that use 80s pop music throughout course of their.
Our Doctor, played by Ralph Fiennes, is very resourceful. He has a wind up record player. Which is our excuse to hear some lovely 80s tracks in this film.
And you're going to be doing a full... You're going to be indulging in that.
Dragging them up next week for your listening pleasure.
I tell you, I'm here next week. again, it's this weird sort of nostalgia-y sort of thing that goes on with
it. It's handled so well. And I have to say, I've always loved Ralph Fiennes since trying to get to see him in Ivanov in, 90s London. He is so good in this. It's just one of the best screen performances in this kind of film.
I think he's on a bit of a role at the moment, is old Rafe. And I suppose one thing we should say here, that it's almost like we can't say too much about what goes on in the film.
Because it's obviously lining up for a potential third film, which has been greenlit now.
Yeah. So...
But we don't want to spoil anything.
We just thought it was really, really good. As I say, it's quite genuinely horrific.
Yeah.
In parts.
But it's mostly, it's about the humanity of it as well, and it is mostly people against people. There's not as much, there's not as many rage-infected encounters.
The zombies
are
take
there?
A back seat in this, don't they? Yeah. Instead, you have...
Somebody does use the zombie word as well in it.
Well, I must have missed that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a bit of dialogue where they mention the Z word. It's quite funny.
Yes, so... This let's just say that and Spike as well takes a back seat as we're introduced to this other group of Jimmies who sort of worship Jimmy Savile in a sort of there's a whole Jimmy Savile thing going on in this, which, well, again, I don't want to say too much to it, but it's quite clever. But when you think about it too much, and we were doing this before we turned on the mics. Well, how does that work? But just sit back and enjoy it.
Definitely.
Or enjoy might not be the right word. Right, so I'm going to give that a rate.
Me too.
Yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
Go see
it.
Definitely. You might be worth watching the previous one first.
Any excuse.
Yeah, so you just go.
We were saying about the second film, 28 months later. It's like they've just sort of sidelined that now and we're just ignoring.
I'm sorry, I have no idea what you're talking about. Okay.
Right. I caught this film at preview at the London Film Festival. Hamnet is out now for your viewing pleasure. It's the novel interpretation of the novel by Maggie O'Farrell, which I loved when I read it. Chloe Zhao's directed. Already had all of the Spielberg's produced, but it's already had all of the sort of award buzz for Paul Mescal as William Shakespeare. But the lead really in this film is Jessie Buckley as a version of Anne Hathaway named Agnes in this story. Emily Watson also makes a really good supporting role as Shakespeare's mother, and her relationship with Agnes in this film I find really fascinating as well. It's already quite divisive. So it's got a massive Oscar buzz. It's got a massive award buzz about it. And it's probably been sold in, because it is Spielberg produced, it's been sold as the greatest love story, you know. And for me, that's not what this film is. This film is really earthy, really. So it's imagining Agnes as what if, little we know about Anne Hathaway, well, what if that's. What historians have imagined about her being this harridan that dragged Shakespeare back to Stratford when he didn't want to be there and trapped him into marriage because she got pregnant. What if they were two people that met and fell in love instantly and had this kind of primal urge for each other? What if she was, because we knew she was a herbalist, so what if she was maligned for that? And what if she was an intelligent woman that knew the right thing to do and that just loved this man and they had a family? And then they go through this enormous grief when they lose their son, Hamnet, which they don't know how to communicate with each other after this point. It's impossible. I felt the grief of this film in my bones, I did sob cry. And I saw it for a second time in the cinema, and there's this interesting soundtrack going on of other people stifling sniffles. I think you'd have to have a cold heart of stone to not find it moving or involving. I absolutely adore this film. And I don't want to say anything more than that, really, about the narrative of it, where it goes. I love the relationships between the women in it as well. And what must it have been like hundreds of years ago to bear children? And the women worked together to deliver children. There wasn't these men walking around in white coats telling them what to do and what not to do. And just the animosity from Emily Watson's character, who's Shakespeare's mother, who doesn't want them to be together.
Yeah.
And then the support that she offers during these moments of childbirth and grief are really interesting, and the relationship with the women there as well. I adored this film. I will not have a word said against it. And I'm
not saying anything against it.
But yeah, it is a snot cry film.
So that's a full-on recommendation.
Yeah, yeah.
Wonderful. All right, maybe I might go. All right. You can stop giving me those Chinese burns now. Marty Supreme, and we've both seen this, haven't we?
Yeah.
Well, film about ping pong. This is directed by...
It's table tennis!
They call it ping pong a lot in the actual film. It's a film set in the 1950s. Timothée Chalamet is aspiring to be... the greatest table tennis player in the world. Is directed by Josh Safdie.
So that's Uncut Gems guy, isn't it? And it's got a very similar vibe.
Very similar. This is it's all New York. It's very incredibly
New York in the 50s.
Tense.
Oh my gosh, I'm going to say it.
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
It's a break. Chalamet plays this truly reprehensible character.
What a narcissist.
I didn't like him at the beginning. And I must admit, even at the end, I still didn't like him. But he's fascinating.
It's a fine balance, isn't it, between disliking somebody and spending that time with them cinematically.
I can't believe what he's doing next. It rattles along for most of the time. The one big drawback is 2.5 hours long.
Long, isn't it? Yeah.
And I'm sorry.
That is a long time to spend with somebody that is quite so narcissistic.
And there are a couple of bits where the pace dips a little and you really, really notice it.
But that's because it's so full on the rest of the time.
And couldn't you just cut that down a bit? It's fascinating from some of the people who turn up in it. Sandra Bernhardt is briefly in it. I can only assume...
Reduced to Neighbour's Mum.
Neighbour's Mum. Maybe there's loads more of that. Gaza Rurig, the Hungarian actor.
The Honeyman.
The Honeyman. Mm. He was the star of Son of Saul. Laszlo Nemes's film about concentration.
80s there? Was that?
Well, that was about
2000. Is that the more recent one?
Is there? And he smiles. I've never seen this man smile in a film with what he's being put through. There's Abel Ferrara, the director of Bad Lieutenant and Ms. 45, is in there.
But you haven't mentioned yet Gwyneth Paltrow and Even.
I was going to be my big finish.
Sorry.
If you don't want to, I don't want to say yes. The Return of the Queen. Gwyneth Paltrow playing a sort of meta role here where she's playing a Hollywood star who has retired and is making or trying to make a big comeback in a Broadway show.
A delusional comeback,
I think she was doing all right. I think she was doing okay. But I thought she was great in this. And I've never been particularly... But
I've always found her a little bit on the negative Marmite side.
I thought she was... And I've never thought about this before. I thought she was very, very sexy. In the character she played was very, very sexy. Very sensuous.
She's sort of trapped in this marriage of... financial convenience, isn't she?
Yeah. And Marty gives us something where she might be able to release that. The other big thing about it is the music. It's littered. It's set in 1952, but it's littered with pop songs from the 1980s. And it's brilliantly done, isn't it?
We're
going to play one of them now. Was there something else you wanted to say about the music while we were on about
I'm good.
We'll go straight into it. And this is The Perfect Kiss from New Order.
Good stuff.
We'll be right back.
faded that because we've got a lot to get through.
Oh, there's so much coming out. Well, already out and watched and in the bag ready for your reviews. Continuing, Rental Family comes out. I saw a preview of that at the Light. It's the Japanese film featuring Brendan Fraser as an American actor.
Mm-hmm.
We'll review that next week, I think. But that's showing from Tuesday, I think, at the Light. History of Sound is out on Friday. That's the Paul Mescal, Josh O'Connor, both very buzzy actors, let's face it. But the exciting one for me, No Other Choice, Park Chan-wook. It's out on Friday. The Korean filmmaker, thriller film this is. There is a preview at the Light on Monday you can catch. Highly recommend that. Oh, that's my phone listening to me.
You turn your phone off, please.
I have, yeah. So that's very exciting. What else have we got? H for Hawk is out.
Yeah, I don't know much about that, but I thought you'd know all about that.
Well, yeah, my
you know, it's your sort of film.
My other half has read the book, in fact.
Ah, right, there you are, handy.
Yeah. That's the... Well, we've seen the trailer a lot for it. It's the PhD student who loses her father, played by Brendan Gleeson, and starts to train a hawk.
Does he never sleep, Brendan Gleeson?
Absolutely never, no.
These people.
You've mentioned Saipan, but I'm not up for this one, but this is the...
It was Steve Coogan. It's all about the Irish Republic football extravaganza.
There was a big fallout with Roy Keane and the trainer.
I'm not sure it's for me either, but I just said, you know, come on, the boy, come on, the lads.
To Live and Die in LA, is that one that appeals to you? They're doing the Midnight Marauders of that on Friday.
It's been like that in
the
To Live and Die in LA is an amazing film.
11 o'clock.
One of the best car chases ever.
Don't be fooled by the Midnight Marauders train title for it. It is on at 11 p.m.
They didn't put their clocks back.
So some exciting stuff. And, yeah. Oh, we haven't even mentioned The Voice of Hind Rajab. It's out now.
Yep.
We've watched it. Well, I have, you're going to. And we're going to review it properly next week because it is a stunning film.
Sorry, it's all been a bit of a rush. We've been here, there and everywhere.
We were out of practice.
And the CD player isn't working properly. So we might go out with a bit of music from a Bela Tarr film.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it goes. We'll be back next week.
Oh, we're so excited.
Yeah.
Enjoy your films.
Enjoy your films.